I forgot to welcome my own sister-in-law, Bonnie, is here with us too. So yeah, what happened to that? Yeah, sorry, Bonnie. But yeah, Bonnie's here for Thanksgiving, and it's been her custom the last few years, and glad to have her with us. So I was looking for our little puppy when I was leaving the house, because it's always a sad time when we leave for him, and found him outside sitting on one of the chairs outside just basking in the sun, so I had to bring him in. So kind of rushing, I was looking all over for him, couldn't find him, so finally I looked outside, there he was. So I had a very vivid dream a few weeks ago. The interesting thing about dreams is that they can create memories of events that never occurred. They're in your imagination, right? Isn't that you? That's something that occurred to you. That's the way this dream was. And when I woke up, of course, lots of times when we have dreams, you know, we dream, but we forget we dream. We forget what happened. But sometimes there are dreams that are so vivid that we do remember them, right? And this particular dream, which I'm not going to share with you, I'm not going to tell you about it. How many want me to share this dream? How many of you want? Yeah, look at that. No. Not too many people. Okay, not enough. Not enough to warrant sharing. But when I woke up, I could remember specific instances of things that happened, seeming like over a period of days or weeks in this dream. But obviously, I don't even know how long the dream was. I mean, but I remembered things and details that obviously never occurred, and believe me, never will occur in that instance. So that's the way dreams are. Sometimes dreams are a combination of real events and imagined events, right? It's the way it is. And there's dreams in the Bible. It's not a sermon about dreams or anything like that, but there are dreams in the Bible, and there were very specific and vivid dreams, like we've covered in the book of Daniel here just recently, specific and vivid dreams that Nebuchadnezzar had, and they were interpreted for him. So I'm not going to tell you my dream. It's not really important, but what is important is the spiritual counterpart, because dreams take place when we're asleep. Unless we're daydreaming, and I'm not talking about that kind of thing where your mind is just wandering, and which sometimes helpful or sometimes even a part of meditation. But there are numerous passages that warn us and ask us this question, in a sense, are you awake? Now, in my dream, I thought I was awake. You're experiencing things, you're talking to people, you're doing things, you're interacting with society, and you think you're awake in the presence of your dreaming, but you're really not. You're sound asleep. Your mind is working overtime. It's a fascinating topic, but I'm not covering dreams, but I thought I was awake experiencing those things while I'm fully asleep. And certainly there is that spiritual counterpart, because people can be asleep, as you know, the Bible warns us. And I think, in fact, a lot of people have understood that fact in this age. And in, maybe you would say it's just a secular sense, that they have woken up to a certain degree about what's happening in the world. So today let's examine how we can remain alert and awake. I really feel that you are, but you want to stay that way, right? And we all want to stay that way. And we certainly have experienced something in the last 5 years, let's call it the COVID years and the aftermath, just the events leading up to it and that which happened shortly after. I know that we've talked a lot about that, but I am very convinced that we're living in the times of the end. Now, Paul was too, that he was living in the times of the end. But I'm convinced that we're living in the times of the end, and I think that that's the point of the Bible, that we are all to feel as though we're living in the times of the ends, because it is the time of the end for all of us, because we have a limited lifespan, and eventually we'll all die. Okay, sad to contemplate, but a reality. And we are living our own lives in the time of the end, and it's important that we utilize the same tools, even if Christ weren't to return for another 50 years, because Christianity demands that of us. Now, think about this. When we reflect on what happened during the time of COVID, even now you can find voices in various areas, important voices, voices that should be heard. I'm not saying they should be paid attention to, but they should be heard. Voices that warn us that even greater and greater plagues could doom us in the future. Now, I don't think I'm the only one. You have probably heard people say there's going to be worse plagues than COVID come upon us. Now, they talk about monkeypox, and they talk about other strains and influenzas, which will certainly be far more damaging to the world than COVID was. I mean, that was pretty damaging. The whole thing was pretty damaging. It was extremely contagious. Retrospectively, we know how contagious it was. And it was severe to basically the older citizens of basically all populations of the earth. And not danger to kids, not at all. But we closed down schools because of it. Not something that they had to be protected of, but yet authorities warned that children should be inoculated against this horrid disease, which didn't really pose any problem to them. So we live in an age, think about it, if we're going to have even greater and greater and more horrible diseases come upon us, we live in an age where we have conquered so many ailments. We have conquered so many of these casual diseases which used to ravage mankind. And basically, through a better understanding of sanitation and hygiene, we have been able to get rid of a lot of health problems, right? And we've got advanced sewer systems, which 200 years ago mankind did not have, by and large. We've got a greater understanding of what actually causes disease and microbes and bacteria and all that sort of thing. And, you know, just as an aside, probably as you get into the cooler months, even though Tucson doesn't really get all that cold, I was joking earlier, it gets down in the teens at nighttime in December and January and that sort of thing, of course. But with colder weather, people get more prone, even in this climate, get more prone to colds and flus and that sort of thing. And the Bible actually helps us to understand sanitation and hygiene, and just the simple act of washing your hands frequently is an effective deterrent to exchanging disease, because we touch our eyes, we touch our mouth, we touch our nose, our ears, all of these areas, and we pick up germs by our hands. So washing your hands is an effective deterrent. The Bible helps us to understand that, you know, washing is a good thing to do. But why will there be even greater and more horrific disease epidemics? Why is this becoming a thing? Why? I mean, have you stopped to consider the idea that why, all of a sudden, in the 21st century, when we are so advanced, why should we be expecting horrific diseases that will kill millions more people than COVID did? Have you thought about that? Have you wondered? Have you questioned that? I mean, it's illogical on the face of it, isn't it? And yet, there are people who should be listened to. Like I say, I don't think that, like some of the other experts a few years ago, I don't think they should be paid attention to, but they should be listened to because they are change agents. They are leaders. We won't go into the names. You could figure it out. Why are there going to be, apart from Bible prophecy, which says in Matthew 24 that that will be a sign preceding Jesus' coming, so we know it's coming, but why will it be coming? We might get into that later today in Matthew 24 and after Mr. Anderson's presentation. Here is something I'm I'm pretty certain you've not been taught in church before. Because I haven't taught it, and I've been speaking now for many years, and I haven't heard it, and I've been listening for well over 50 years. And that's not an issue, that's not a shortcoming of anybody's, but I think it's just an idea that maybe just hasn't been presented. If it's been presented by others, then kudos to them. But here is a key to understanding and staying awake. And it's hard. It's going to be very difficult to get this concept across in one sense, in its totality. Here's the idea. And the Bible teaches it. Evil projects itself. Evil projects itself. And now with a mountain of evidence to back you up, you can go back in time and you can see where there was a projection early on, 3-4 years, even earlier than that, that there would be something like COVID. In fact, various agencies projected, and individuals who led those agencies projected that there would be this horrible disease epidemic. In fact, one health official in 2017 of January actually predicted that during the next 4 years, the United States and its administration, that was specifically mentioned in a speech in Washington, D.C., that there would be a very serious outbreak that would take place within the next 4 years. And so you have to ask yourself the question. The answer is, or why people knew, and the answer is that evil likes to brag. Evil likes to project itself, and the Bible teaches us this. And not in a lot of places, and it doesn't have to be in a lot of places, but I'll show you today. It's a key to understanding what will happen tomorrow and the next day and the next day for as long as we live, because I think most people will agree, now that we've had a little time to reflect, a little time to get our feet settled and grounded, we have time to examine what has happened. And it's important to examine what has happened. It really is. I know that in a like way, and maybe some people get tired of this, I don't know. But in a like way, 30 years ago, United Church of God began. It began as a result of the current administration of the church changing doctrines and not wanting to have a conference in regards to those changes and discuss it. And that's what began with this reorganization and the determination not to have one man rule and all that sort of thing, as you know. And that's why it began. That's how it began. Others began in other ways and times and, you know, for their own reasons, and that's fine too. But some people got tired of, oh, when are you guys going to get off of that? Well, you know, we talked about it for a long time because it was important to review history, even if it was current history, just recent history, so that those mistakes aren't making themselves present in the future reality of our lives. It was just something that needed to be spoken about on a number of occasions. In the 20 and 21st centuries, you know, they've had the study of criminology. They're able to, and you've probably seen TV shows about that. I think even certain TV series talk about it. I wouldn't watch them because it's so distasteful, and it really is kind of delving into the mind of evil, and it's more hideous than you can imagine. But they've had the study of criminology, in which one of the aspects of studying criminology is studying serial killers. That's ghastly. That's horrible. You can probably think of several people that have come to mind, Ted Bundy, And, you know, a bunch of, probably killed dozens and dozens and dozens of people, maybe a lot more than, you know, people disappear and they go into missing persons. And then you find out that, you know, they've been abducted and killed by some strange maniac. But one of the things that they have discovered about these evil men, and I don't know if there's anything more evil on the face of the earth than just plain old serial killers, bloodthirsty people, is that they like to brag about their achievements. It, almost without fail. Now, we're delving into the darker side of not just human nature, but satanic nature here. But one of the things they like to do is they like to brag about and project about what their next accomplishments are going to be. If I gave you the name David Berkowitz, I don't know if anybody here would know who that is. Maybe he went to high school with him or something. Maybe he was a guy that... But if I mentioned, without looking on your phone, stop that. If I mentioned David Berkowitz, I'll bet nobody here would know who I'm talking about. Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Oh, you looked on your phone. Yeah, you looked on your phone too. But if I said, now you just ruined the whole punchline by you guys being real... Real eager beavers. I'm smart, Mr. Buchanan. I remember if I mentioned Son of Sam, everybody probably here because you're very older. Okay. Look, what a crowd. I've been here too long. Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, bragged about his intentions. I gave my sons the notes. That's how they know. He sent, as many of you may remember, this happened back in the 70s, I believe, taunting letters to the police and the media, mocking their efforts to catch him. He was bragging about, you know, he killed this person, that person, then would give clues about, and then, but they could never find him, but they eventually did. They eventually mess up. But it was a part of his behavior in which he wanted to instill fear and gain notoriety. He wanted to be famous. And who does that remind you of in the spiritual realm? The devil. Now get this. He was called, now without looking at my notes, you guys, he was called the Son of Sam because he said he was taking orders from a black dog that belonged to his neighbor named Sam. And he said that that dog was demon-possessed and was giving him his orders to kill and to execute his evil plans. So he was the son of Sam, a son of maybe the dog was demon-possessed. I don't know. There are those instances in the Bible where demons can enter into an animal, as you know. So I don't know if he was the one that had the demon. The dog did, but anyway, he had this story. The point is, evil projects itself. And evil is evil, right? I mean, there are levels of evil, I suppose you could say, but evil projects itself in this present day. We just have to be aware of it. And shame on us if after everything that happened during COVID and the fact that there's mountains of evidence to show that there is a war game plan of COVID, in fact, in place back in the early teens by various governmental agencies. And it just so happens that it all came according to that plan. I'm not going to bore you with that. You can look it up. I mean, it's a matter of fact. It's a matter that it's out there. And it was game planned all along. Now, none of us could have envisioned the horror brought on the world by COVID. But what about next time? Well, you know the old saying, yeah, fool me once, shame on me. Or shame on you. I'll get it backwards now. like the old boxer that's, you know, kind of brained it. fool me. You better not fool me. You shouldn't let it happen again. Let's turn to Psalm 10. Because here is where the Bible shows us that is a matter of the nature of the devil's mind. Psalm 10, and it is a beautiful explanation of what has happened at various stages through history and a beautiful example of what happened to all of us. The whole world was affected by COVID, and that is something so universal that apart from world wars, it had never happened this way, in which something similarly affected the entire world. And in fact, one of the hallmarks of the end time is that the entire world will be deceived, right? Yes, the entire world will be deceived. So in Psalm 10, the psalmist is saying, and I think this was David, but I'm not positive, it doesn't say the chapter heading, "Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide in times of trouble? The wicked in his pride persecutes the poor." Something that has happened, and this is what evil does. "Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised." And yes, they have been caught. If you look at COVID as a plot that was hatched upon the world, it's not a conspiracy to see that there was a, well, just for the uninitiated, let's just say you don't know anything about COVID. I mean, I was deceived in the early stages of this disease into thinking that it originated with bat soup in a market in China. And there are still some who persist in saying that. I remember speaking to Sheila and Paula, as a matter of fact. How could this happen? Well, yeah, just, you know, I'm explaining from science, you know, I'm explaining the science. It's something that came from bats and transferred to humans, and then it became contagious within humans. And then we come to find out that it wasn't a natural source at all. It was actually something that was studied, and it was a virus that did come from some parts of bats and bat disease, and yet it was spliced and diced, and it was actually originally studied. The virus itself was studied at the University of Texas in Galveston, and then they transferred that study to a lab in University of North Carolina, and then there were certain people who were responsible for it, and their names have become pretty familiar, and then that was all transferred, that research was all transferred to China, and then it leaked from China, and then boom. So, but again, some of this, I may be known a little bit more than the average person, because I grew up near Fort Detrick, Maryland, in which that was a bioweapons facility in which they dreamed up these things, biowarfare. I mean, that's all it is, really. I mean, that's evil enough to think about it. I mean, bombs are bad, and, you know, guns and rockets that destroy people and hydrogen bombs and nuclear warfare is horrible, but so is this. So, continuing on, I think some of that has been exposed to many people, even in the general public. Nothing's done about it, but at any rate, "For the wicked boasts of his heart desire." This is what Son of Sam did. This is what evil people do. This is what Satan projected as well when he said he's going to ascend to the Most High in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28. "He blesses the greedy and renounces the Lord." And as we'll see, as we go on further into the sermon today, it aptly describes evil of today. "The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts," and that explains a lot of evil, even today, because there's no thought. It's not just atheism, it's a rejection of God altogether. "His ways are always prospering." That's the way it seems. And like I said, nothing's done about some of these people. They seem to get away with things. "But your judgments are far above, out of his sight." You know, God has a plan, right? "As for his enemies, he sneers at them. He has said in his heart, I shall not be moved. I shall never be in adversity." This is the attitude. "His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is trouble and iniquity." Now, this is a kind of evil that, because you're normal, you can't imagine. Even though you see the results all around you all the time, you see the results everywhere in the world today. You can't imagine this because you have a normalcy bias, and you project that normalcy onto everybody else. because nobody could be that horrid. Nobody could be that bad. Nobody could possibly be as evil as that. And the normalcy bias is what prevents people from accepting the fact that the evil have their plans and they hatch them like spiders' eggs. And they scurry all over the place. If you ever hit a spider's nest and had a lot of eggs in it, you know, all of a sudden you get a bunch of little tiny, little itty bitty spiders that go all over the place. Ugh, it's kind of horrible. Don't like it. Verse 8, he sits in the lurking places of the villages. In the secret places, he murders the innocent. His eyes are secretly fixed on the helpless. It's a game to the evil and the wicked. It is a game that they perfect and master, and it, you know, it's a thread that runs through history, as a matter of fact. The Machiavellian thought process that is constantly meditating on how to take advantage of others. These are the musings of Machiavellian philosophy going way, 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 way back. He lies in wait secretly as a lion in his den. Satan is a roaring lion. He lies in wait to catch the poor. He catches the poor when he draws him into his net. Unsuspecting, simple. So he crouches, he lies low, that the helpless may fall by his strength. He has said in his heart, God is forgotten. He hides his face, he will never see. That is the attitude per se. It's not a spoken thing, but that's what the actions portray. It's almost as if evil, without having any conscience whatsoever, always thinks it gets away with it. And that's the mind of the devil. You can read through the rest of the chapter, and the good news is, verse 16, the Lord is king forever and ever. The nations have perished out of his hand. O Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. You will prepare their heart. You will cause your ear to hear, to do justice to the fatherless and to the oppressed, that the man of the earth may be oppressed no more. That day is coming. That's the really, really good news. But this passage describes our time and describes any time in which evil is present. And that's been since the Garden of Eden. If you're going to be aware of what happens next in the future, you'll need to adopt this psalm as your guide. One of the things that will help you to stay spiritually alert. And this is what I spoke of that, you know, maybe you may not have heard before. This idea that evil will tell you what it's going to do before it happens. And the Bible shows us that. And that is, in fact, what we experienced through the COVID time. And it was just such an evil, evil, evil time. And it will be worse as we move forward into the future, into history. Here's another point. You can never think, you've got to really caution yourself against this. You can never think, they would never do that. Because the moment you think they would never do that, or you think it's so horrible and wretched, they've already done it. They've been doing it for a long time. So evil projects, and we were fooled during the COVID years as to its origins, to whom it was most dangerous, and how it could be defeated, and so on. It was all a pack of lies. It was all evil. So I don't think it's an arguable point at this stage. I mean, it certainly doesn't seem to be. I mean, you must know this now with the mountains of evidence that was present even before it came into the world in 2020. Yeah, it was horrible. It was a planned event of evil. It was executed very well by evil men who project their evil. And with, as in the case of most insanity, it becomes totally illogical. It's like all these brainiacs who want to save the earth, who want to protect you by destroying the farms. You know, maybe you're not aware of this, but there is a certain segment of leadership today that is calling for the abolition of farms in many countries in Europe. Like, I didn't know this until a couple of years ago. that the Netherlands, this little tiny little postage stamp nation size, with the Dutch, who were incredibly inventive and probably the best farmers on earth, are the second leading exporter of food in the entire world. Who knew? I certainly didn't. The United States is the first. Think of that. With their ability to reclaim the sea and with their ability to move water and to, I mean, they're a low, low country. You know, many areas under sea level. Who could have predicted that they could do that, that they would be able to do that? But yet, they've been infiltrated in their government in terms of people who want to reduce, quote, what they think. They tell you that it's all for the good. They want to kill all the cattle so that people won't starve anymore. I mean, it's they want to get rid of the farms so there'll be plenty of food for everybody. Now, that doesn't make any sense, but that's in essence what they're saying. And craziness is like that. Now, notice 2 Timothy chapter 3. Let me supplement this point about evil and how it projects itself. And we've covered this at times before, but 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. You know where I'm going. But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. We've kind of had a foretaste of perilous times. And we didn't expect it. We were unaware that it could happen. You know, shame on the people that brought it upon us and brought it upon the entire world and actually killed people through it. Whether you want to call it an honest mistake or a stupid mistake or a slip-up or an error, which I don't think it was, the end result is the same. Perilous times will come. Mankind has had perilous times, usually in times of world war, and sometimes when they've been isolated, you know, one area of the world that's totally separated because of we didn't have the transportation 400 or 500 years ago, perilous times, this place, that place. But never before, except in world war, have we had such a perilous time that affected virtually the entire world as those times. Don't want to belabor the point. Paul is describing something very different here. And I think that our viewpoint of this particular passage has certainly been heightened by our understanding of what can happen and what evil men can do. Notice, for men will be lovers of themselves. You can pick them out of a lineup, really, of society. People who love to prattle on, love their own musings and everything else. Lovers of money, well, we've certainly seen that, and so don't decry money. Money can be used to accomplish a great deal, but their love of money exceeds their love of humankind. They have no love for humankind. It's greed. Boasters, there's some boasting taking place. I remember boasting, arrogance, pride. Especially in one speech I heard that made a bold prediction. What? Yeah, well, you know, we have seasonal flu every year, and that has killed, you know, sometimes even as many as 30, 40 million Americans. Flu, just regular flu, during a year. You can look it up. And then it disappeared for a while. There was no seasonal flu at all. Can't make this stuff up. Boasters, proud, blasphemers, people who blaspheme are blaspheming God. Disobedient to parents, and you could say maybe you got some rowdy teenagers in this verse, but I don't think it means that. I think it is applicable to the way that these evil people grew up. They can be very smart. They're on the edge of between Son and Sam, and seeming to be rational and logical to the rest of society, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers. We've seen a whole slew of that, and you can just figure that out on your own as to how that works in the present day world. But don't overlook it, please, because to overlook it is to overlook evil that is present and right in front of you without self-control. Brutal. Yes, some of the things, when you begin to peel back the onion, are so disgusting that I can't even talk about them in a sermon. They're so disgustingly evil when it comes to how children are treated, when it comes to how the human beings are treated, how women are treated. This kind of stuff is rampant in the world today. It hasn't affected us for the most part. You, I mean, as an individual. But you see the people that are affected by this on the news virtually every day. Brutal, despisers of good. You know, woe to those who call good evil and evil good, right? Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. So the question is this: which men is Paul speaking of? Which men? Is it everybody? Because that's how we used to apply this verse universally. This is the way the entire world is. No. The entire world is not this way. This applies to a specific group of individuals, and when we jump down to verse 13, we see exactly who it is speaking of. It doesn't mean that every man in the world will mirror these tendencies, but some do, and enough to make a difference and to hurt a lot of lives. Evil men and imposters will grow worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. Their hubris, their arrogance, their pride is so great that they become self-deceiving. Thinking, you know, this is the right thing to do. There's a man that's very familiar to all of you that couldn't have really had the best of intentions in many parts of the third world when he introduced something to the native populations that killed hundreds of thousands of people. And yet many people think, well, that individual is doing good. That individual has been banned in India. Don't want anything to do with him. It's been exposed. And yet nothing ever comes of it, because that's the way this world is. So I'll tell the story of, well, my granddaughter is here, Liana, and she asked her dad, James, the other day, "Daddy, why do some people not believe in God?" And James says, "Well, you know, honey, they haven't been taught properly like you've been taught. They haven't been taught about God, and there's various other reasons." And she said, "Well, if God loves us, why does he allow bad things to happen in the world?" That was, I think, very prescient for a seven-year-old. And James, as a good father, explained, "Well, you know, sometimes God allows things to happen to us to help us learn lessons. It's not the greatest, but God knows how much we can take, and sometimes we learn lessons through adversity and problems and difficulties, and, you know, I have, and you will, and, you know, sometimes it's good for you to ask these questions, and sometimes the reason bad things happen is because there's a devil." And, "Well, Daddy, what does the devil do?" "Well, honey, he's the god of this world." "What?" "Yeah, he's the god of this world. He's been placed on this earth, and that's where he has to stay. And he hates man because God threw him out of heaven." "Well, why did he throw him out of heaven?" "Well, because he tried to kill God." "What?" "And sometimes, because he is the god of this world, he does bad things to people. And he causes bad things to happen to them." "Well, that sucks." It's a good lesson. It's the truth. Evil men, the ones spoken of here, are powerful enough to make their dreams come true, just like David Berkowitz or Paul Bundy. And you see them in the news all the time. But many passages of the Bible show that it is the difference makers in the world who are the ones that cause perilous times. You see, I think my understanding of prophecy may have been similar to yours, is that thought that the development of the times of the end and the current events and everything would be kind of an organic, step-by-step process, and it's going to happen because of this and reaction here and that sort of thing. And really, the bad things about the times preceding Christ's return and the times right up to his return are caused by evil men and Satan, demonic forces, and not just an orderly progression of things that have happened, that we could examine. Paul wasn't speaking about everyone. He was speaking about the men who are directing the lives of people, leaders. And in this nation, when Bible prophecy speaks about them, it speaks about them with terms like shepherds and leaders and priests. And we went through the minor prophets a couple years ago, and you can find many instances in Amos and Micah and various other minor prophets, and then in Isaiah and Ezekiel about, man, it's the leaders who are causing you to go astray. That's where evil resides, that is changing the course of humanity. And as I said, when you begin to really examine how evil these people are, prominent people, people that you hear about in the news every day, it's the things that they do and are part of are now, it's kind of so out in the open, but it's so distasteful. We just can't talk about it in a sermon presentation, but it involves human lives and tragedy and evil and frustration that we can see in Psalm 10 on the part of the psalmist who's wondering, how long is this going to go on? And David often, asked the question, how long, eternal, hide thou away, one of the songs in our hymnal. But these are individuals who are ungodly, unholy, unloving, but they have power and they despise good. It's not every single person on the planet. Now, don't let naivety affect you going forward where you don't see it coming. Notice in Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 32, because I'm not saying that any of us are simple and dumb or whatever, okay, but there's a simplicity and there's a kind of naivety that is dangerous. So you can't be naive and simple and yet be alert is the key here in this part of the sermon. Proverbs 1 and verse 32, for the turning away of the simple will slay them. Not paying attention, not being aware of your surroundings, like the world that we live in, like you tell your children to be aware of their surroundings if they go into a different place and to be alert, have your head on a swivel, be looking for what's going on if they're going into a new experience, right? I taught our children, around the dinner table on Friday nights. We'd all get together and talked about it. I said, look, nothing good happens after midnight on Saturday night. You have to realize that your children, you're a preacher's kid. You're a PK. If you believe in the devil, you have to understand that there's a bullseye on your back. You've got to be careful about life. So don't be simple. Strive not to be simple. Strive not to be a dummy. You're not. I'm just, using that to have a little humor. And apparently it was just a little. Okay. Proverbs 14 and verse 15. Proverbs 14 and verse 15. The simple believes every word, but the prudent considers well his steps. That is true in viewing virtually everything in the world today and evaluating everything. You have to be discerning about what you allow into your mind. You have to be discerning about the sources that you use. And this may sound so simple and easy, but I have found that the people in news who are the most believable are the ones who profess their belief in God very strongly. And in fact, I found them to be the best sources of realistic news today. Done long ago with whatever you consider the six major legacy TV stations, long, long ago, No. It's not worth it. There are some good people, but they are like, Bonnie said this the other day, it's like, this guy is a good newscaster, but he's kind of like the light version of somebody that I listen to. He's good, but he can't say much because most news is controlled. It's controlled. It's controlled information to the masses. That's another topic. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. This is where we want to be. A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. So being simple and asleep, basically the same thing. Understanding the nature of evil in the time of the end is a key to staying spiritually alert and awake and aware. So now let's take just a few minutes as we conclude here today, and let's figure out how we can stay awake effectively. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Paul didn't spend a great deal of time in Thessalonica. Few weeks, got to know the people, came back later, but enough to teach them a lot about the time of the end and about the resurrection and about the coming of Jesus Christ and everything else. I mean, that was his gospel message, right? And along with just understanding who and what Jesus Christ was to this assembly of Jews and Gentiles, to helping them to understand not just that he was their savior, but he was coming back. Okay, so that was they got the full gospel message. The world has gotten kind of a little bit of the gospel message that Jesus Christ came to save the world. They haven't gotten a whole bit for the most part. That's something that we have certainly taught for many, many years. But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. So that sets it up. They knew about the future. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. Now this will affect the vast majority of the earth. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of the day. A thief comes in the night, he breaks in at the night, we know that. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep. So even though we could be affected by the thief in the night, the times coming upon us unexpectedly, we're not to sleep. We're not to be spiritually simple, imprudent, naive in that sense. But let us watch and be sober. So Paul continues by showing that there's no relation, there's no substitute for a relationship with God. And if this is the last thing you take, it should be the last thing you take, it's the only thing you take with the sermon today, your relationship with God is most vital to staying awake. For those who sleep, sleep at night. Those who get drunk are drunk at night. So sleeping and being drunk spiritually are aligned together there. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love. So this is a way to stay awake, faith and love. And as a helmet, the hope of salvation. He speaks about that also in Ephesians 6. For God did not appoint us to wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate goal of your calling, is that you would attain salvation. He wants us there. Who died for us, that whether we wake or sleep, we should live together with him. That's hearkening back to the previous chapter in which he helped people to understand why some died in the faith. Therefore, comfort each other and edify one another just as you are doing. Now, there are many passages. We'll turn to several of them as we close today. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may, someone to devour. And there's, of course, Romans chapter 13 and verse 11, where Paul says, "And do this, knowing the time, that now it is high time to be awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light." I'd like to close with this particular passage in 2 Peter 3. I've used this a few times in my newsletter. And nobody wants to be here, but none of you would say, okay, I'm in this category myself. But Peter says in 2 Peter 3 and verse 1, "Beloved, I now write to you this second epistle, in both of which I've stirred up your pure minds by way of reminder." So we need to be mindful of, we need to be reminded from time to time of certain things. "That you be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and of the commandments of us, the apostles of the Lord and Savior." God inspired Peter. He was not bragging. He was just saying that what he was writing to them carried the full force and engagement in their lives as everything that they had seen before in Scripture. And in fact, he even calls Paul's writings Scripture as well. And the recognizing that the canon of the Bible was beginning to come together to be completed. "Knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts, many of them in this leadership capacity and of evil people that I've spoken of. And they don't believe in God." So it's not as though they're saying, where is the promise of their coming? But it could apply even to people who had once been called. Because people can fall away, people can leave the truth, become unfaithful, however you want to put it. And so it's a warning really to all of us, because we could end up in this category of where you forget what you used to remember. You're in this dreamlike state now, and it's spiritual lethargy. It's not a good dream. It's not an innocuous dream. It's like you're in a dreamlike, sleepy state of not remembering the reality of what you had been taught in the past, or these people. "For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. For this they willfully forget, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of water and in the water, by which the world that then was existed perished, being flooded with water." The point is, Peter goes through to describe the plan of God and the eventual conclusion of all material matter and physical life of any kind. And he says in verse 11 that, "Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness?" Not that you can attain salvation by doing, but that's a part of your life. That's a part of your job description. That's what you have been called to do. You're to be one of holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Everything's going to be gone. It's all going away. If you want to make it forever, if you want to go into eternity, then adopt, not a dreamlike state, but adopt the attitude of being alert and spiritually vigilant, staying close to God, and understanding that not only is it just the generic, not only is it important for us to have an understanding generically that, oh yeah, the whole world is bad, it's evil, rotten, it's not God's world, but the cause of evil is also very important. And the purveyors of evil will oftentimes come as agents of light. with solutions, with ideas that supposedly are going to make things so much better for all of us. Brethren, these are the keys to remaining spiritually awake. Whatever crisis the world is headed into next, let us all be determined to stay alert and awake.